WNYC Studios is brought to you by ZBiotics. Seize the day after a night of drinks with ZBiotics pre-alcohol probiotic drink. ZBiotics was invented by PhD scientists to break down the byproduct of alcohol, which is most responsible for making you feel crummy the next day. Drink ZBiotics before your first drink, drink responsibly, and you'll wake up refreshed and ready to take on the day. Try it for yourself at ZBiotics.com/WNYC and get 15% off your first order when you use WNYC at checkout. That's ZBiotics.com/WNYC and use the code WNYC at checkout for 15% off.
Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Tonight would have been the second presidential debate. Instead, voters can opt in to one of two town halls on competing networks. Immigration, which was the centerpiece of candidate Trump's election strategy in 2016, who can forget build a wall, has been largely absent from the conversation this season and hasn't been addressed in the first debate or even the VP debate. Over the past 4 years, the Trump administration has drastically transformed immigration policy in the U.S. A recent New York Times editorial cited a report released this summer from the Migration Policy Institute, noting that the report, quote, outlined over 400 actions on immigration that had been enacted by a sprawling array of federal departments in the Trump era. And of course, New York City being the city it is, we are affected. WNYC reporter Matt Katz covers ICE detention and refugees, and he joins us now to talk about what these changes mean for us locally. Matt Katz, thanks for being with us.
Thanks, Allison. Hi there.
So President Trump has drastically reduced asylum levels. The New York Times reporting no more than 15,000 people in this fiscal year that started a few weeks back. What impact has this had on the resettled refugees in our area?
I mean, it's dramatic. I mean, they've trickled to almost no resettled refugees in our area. I mean, this is, other than the enforcement at the border and the various issues at the U.S.-Mexican border that we've seen portrayed on TV images over the last 3+ years, I think the changes to the refugee program are really the most dramatic alterations to American immigration policy, at least in our lifetimes. I mean, every year since 1980, the country has let in approximately 100,000 refugees. Last year, it was just over 10,000. It's a massive reduction. So just to give you a sense of what that means for us, in New York and New Jersey, this past fiscal year, 741 refugees came in. In the 2017 fiscal year, which was the end of the Obama administration, 3,477 mm-hmm. refugees came in. It's a absolute fraction. And then the refugees are different. They come from different countries. You're seeing more Russian refugees and hardly any Muslim refugees, despite the fact that there's clearly been refugee crises in Syria and Iraq over the last several years. So, I mean, for example, the country settled about 12,000 Syrian refugees in 2016 mm-hmm. and then just 481 last year. So major differences when it comes to refugee policy and then when it comes to asylum. So refugees are the people that we pre-vet, that we vet while they're abroad, and then we resettle them in our communities here. People who seek asylum are here or are coming, you know, trying to cross the border and, mm-hmm. and are seeking protection. That's all but stopped. I mean, there's basically no longer asylum protections offered to immigrants anymore. I mean, it's for various reasons. Like the Attorney General has changed the reasons you can give for why you need asylum, like gang violence is no longer a reason, which of course is a problem for Central Americans who live in communities that are controlled by gangs. You have to require proof. The standard for proof is a lot higher. Trump-appointed immigration judges are a lot less likely to allow asylum. And people aren't even allowed to make asylum claims, which many experts say is against international law because they're just forced to, like, remain in Mexico for many, many months until their number is called. So major changes when it comes to asylum and refugees in the country.
4 weeks before Election Day, the Trump administration announced stricter rules for the H-1B visa program for professionals, which U.S. companies have long valued. Why the decision to do this less than a month before the election?
Yeah, I mean, the obvious political reason would be, hey, look, we're saving American jobs, even though many think that's not necessarily the case, because these are already jobs that the standard is the Americans can't do the jobs, and that's why we're bringing in these specialists with these special visas to do them. So that's questionable. I don't know how much the politics of the election has to do with it. I know Trump's base certainly appreciates his efforts to all but eliminate immigration. I just think it's part of the many, many ways that the administration, via Stephen Miller, has gone about trying to end even legal immigration in this country. So by these changes in the H-1B visa program mean that there's higher salaries for skilled foreign workers. They mandate higher salaries, which will make it impossible for a tech startup, for example, to hire a foreign worker. It will make it hard for a rural hospital, for example, to bring in a foreign doctor at such a high salary. So it's just a way, it seems, to limit immigration across the board, not just the number of people coming in from the border, not just by separating children from their parents at the border in order to try to deter more from coming in, but also to just cut off these legal mechanisms that have made this country so much more diverse over the last several decades.
Yeah, let me follow up on the legal mechanisms. How has the path to getting a green card or citizenship changed?
It takes a lot longer. The wait is a lot longer. The number of people who process these requests are fewer. And there's something called, there's a new rule that mandates that U.S. officials look at whether you're going to be a public charge. So if you rely or have used benefits like food stamps or housing vouchers, then you could be denied a chance of becoming a citizen, which strikes some as problematic because so many people come here as poor. And the point of the American dream is to come here with maybe very little or next to nothing, and then achieving the American dream and having it all. Well, now that being poor will be held against you in terms of getting a green card and becoming a citizen. And it has had another effect, according to immigration advocates, during the pandemic, because people have been less likely to go to the hospital where they might seek medical care, mm-hmm. but have to rely on government assistance for that because they don't want to be put into some sort of computer system and seen as a public charge, which would potentially prohibit their chances of staying in the country long term.
My guest is Matt Katz. He's giving us an immigration update. And I should also point out, Matt Katz is going to be sitting in the anchor chair for this program for tomorrow. So thank you, Matt Katz. I appreciate that.
Yeah, looking forward to it.
All right, let's talk about President Trump and the Muslim ban. We can take it all the way back. January 2017, banned foreign nationals from 7 predominantly Muslim countries from visiting the country for 90 days, suspended entry to the country of all Syrian refugees indefinitely, prohibited any other refugees from coming to the country for 120 days. So over the past 3 years, it's gone through legal challenges and it's gone through revisions. It's evolved into this complex web of restrictions. Recently, 6 more countries added to the list. So let's just talk about really micro. What does that mean for someone who has a spouse overseas?
Can't bring them here. That's what it comes to. It's not only spouse, but children. There could be people who went back and forth. There could be people who were U.S. citizens and were visiting home for an extended period of time. And then they are able to come back, but their loved ones are not able to. There's now 13 countries on this list. They are mostly Muslim countries. Even visitor visas from these countries have been rejected at a higher rate. This is before the pandemic. I mean, the way immigrants have long come here, by marrying a U.S. citizen and having U.S. citizen children, is now being blocked for these countries, particularly Muslim countries. I mean, this was the this was the immigration issue that got so many people into the streets and into the airports in those first few weeks after Trump was elected. And I think few people realize that it's basically in place. I mean, there is, in order to satisfy the court's requirements, they have a system where you can appeal. But that system is very, it's shrouded in secrecy. It's unclear how it works. And very few people seem to win those appeals. So it's done what all, many of these immigration policies has done, separated families. It's just been a strain, particularly in our area, on Yemeni families. There have been gravely affected. And Iran, Somalia, Kyrgyzstan, I mean, these are all various countries. I mean, there's people from everywhere here, obviously. And all of them have been affected by this ban that's still in place.
Let's talk about the elimination of the temporary protected status. Last month, a 2-1 ruling by the United States Court of Appeals for the Ninth Circuit ruled that the Trump administration acted within its authority in terminating temporary protection status, sometimes called TPS. So what does this elimination mean for immigrants in New York and New Jersey?
It means 15,000 immigrants from El Salvador, Haiti, Nicaragua, Sudan, Honduras, and Nepal have to leave next year, or go into the shadows and be illegal, or get deported by force. This affects 400,000 Americans. This is a program that most people have never heard of, but it is the reason why 400,000 people living in America. These are not American citizens, but 400,000 people living legally in America. It's a program that a lot of people probably never heard about, but it is the reason why there are these people living and working in this country for the last two decades. They were initially allowed to come here under this program because there were problems in their homeland related to war and natural disasters, and they were able to stay. Administration after administration allowed them to stay as long as they, you know, abided by the law and kept working and whatnot. So now there's people who are entrenched in our communities who have children and grandchildren who are U.S. citizens, who have jobs and careers, and they have been rendered illegal as of the beginning of next year. A new president, if Biden was elected, a new president could end this, and then they would be allowed to continue as temporary protected status holders. Also, the Supreme Court could intervene, but the Supreme Court at this point seems to be the makeup of it, especially if and when Amy Barrett gets appointed or gets approved
confirmed
to join the court, confirmed, thank you, looks like they would side with the Trump administration on some of these administration policies, on some of these immigration policies. Yeah.
So, Matt, you've been reporting extensively on immigrants who are currently locked up in ICE jails in northern New Jersey in the midst of this pandemic. How have ICE arrests, detentions, deportation changed under the administration? And the duration of the administration.
Yeah, I mean, the number of people held by ICE across the country has skyrocketed, at least until the pandemic. And that's primarily because under the Obama administration, ICE went after immigrants who had criminal charges or criminal convictions. And now anybody who is here without documentation can get swept up and detained. And immigrants from New York and New Jersey end up in three county jails in North Jersey, in Essex, Hudson, and Bergen County, or in a privately run facility in Elizabeth, New Jersey. And some end up in Orange County, New York. And they end up staying for a whole lot longer than they used to. I mean, I've spoke to a guy who's been there 4 years. I interviewed a man a couple months ago who just got out after more than 3 years. It's an extraordinarily long amount of time to be held in a place that is not meant to hold people for long periods of time. They're jails. They're not prisons. They don't have the same sort of recreational access. They don't get a chance to go outside. At the Bergen County Jail, immigrants are generally not allowed to touch their relatives. So I've spoken to people who have never held their children. And this has only been exacerbated by the fact that just more and more people are getting picked up by ICE.
And how are they getting picked up by ICE in our area?
I mean, it ranges. You know, early morning raids on somebody, an address they have for an undocumented immigrant, so they'll go into an apartment, and if there's other people there, roommates, relatives, and if they can't confirm that they're residents, then, or legal residents, then they get picked up and arrested and detained. There was a guy, and I know I told you I wanted to tell you about it because I just started reporting on it yesterday and I knew I was coming on the air and I had to tell you this story because it's pretty wild. There's a guy I met several months ago in immigration detention at the Essex County Jail in Newark, Julio Colcas. Mm-hmm. And he got picked up because he had a drug charge. So he went from prison to immigration detention. Under prior administrations, he probably would have been allowed to serve his time for the drug charge and then sent home. But he was brought right into ICE detention. He was very surprised by this. It's 2017. He is a green card holder, so he legally lives here, and he had this drug charge from a few years earlier. And because he is not a citizen, any sort of criminal charge, criminal conviction, he can be deported. That's just the law. That has not been necessarily enforced by prior administrations, but President Trump has enforced it. So he ends up in Essex County Jail in ICE detention, and he's there for about 2 years, which is far longer than he was in prison for the drug charge. I first met him earlier this year because he's got mental illness. A psychologist told him that, or wrote a report that I read that said he was unfit to stand in court by himself because of he was emotionally fragile, suicidal. He also has a range of physical ailments. He's 55 years old, and he has lived in this country for 40 years. So he was seeking earlier this year to get out because COVID was coming into the jails. He, in March, went on a hunger strike that I reported on WNYC, along with many other people in his unit. And finally, in April, he was released. ICE released him on humanitarian parole, and he got an ankle bracelet, and he was able to go home and meet his grandson for the first time. He moved back in with his daughter, and he started working. He was going to the beach. He called me as soon as he got out. He was super thrilled to be out. He said he bought himself an $18 dinner, a Peruvian meal. He was born in Peru, and he said it was good as hell. I remember those words echoing because he was so just thrilled by it. He was required to have this ankle bracelet on, which he did, and he was required to go to Newark once a month to check in, which he did. He had to check in with ICE to tell them that what he's doing and he's still there, and because he's got these pending court proceedings about for deportation. So he's doing that, and he lasted that last week, a week ago Monday. He goes to Newark, checks in, fine, go home. Goes home. He gets a call from ICE 2 days later. They're like, there's something wrong with your ankle bracelet. Can you come back in? We need to replace it. So he goes back to Newark, goes back to the ICE office, and they take off his ankle bracelet and they put handcuffs on him. They said, you're going back to jail. He was released due to COVID because COVID was spreading in the jails. People were getting sick. Corrections officers were getting sick. So he was released and he's obviously an at-risk situation. He's an older man. He's got a range of mental and physical problems. And then even though we're still in this pandemic, he was then sent back to jail, even though the numbers, COVID numbers in Essex County and New Jersey are increasing. Really extraordinary that not only are they now increasing, rearresting people in the middle of the pandemic, but they're doing it under false pretenses. Another strange thing, if you got another minute, another very strange thing about this case, but also indicative of, I think, of the way ICE works. I asked the people I talked to at ICE, what happened with this guy? Why was he arrested? How many people have been arrested by telling them there's a broken, giving them this ruse about a broken ankle bracelet? And the only response I got was last night, and it said two Peruvians were removed last night from Newark and sent back to Peru. And I read that as he was deported. And I apparently got a call from him this morning. He was not deported, and ICE has not indicated to me why they made it seem like he was deported. This morning, I did speak to his daughter. I had told her that I think he was deported, and then I told her he is not deported. He's still in jail. She just got out of the hospital yesterday because she just had a new baby, whose name is Sky. And I think we have a little bit of tape from her. Her name is Brandy, and she was talking about what it's like to have her dad locked up and what's going on with the immigration. If you want to play that, Allison.
Yep, go for it, Juliana.
They bonded really well. Like, soon as he came out, because I always show my son pictures and stuff, so he knew who he was. So as soon as he came out, they bonded really well. They became really close. And now he's always asking about his grandpa, and it's like, I have no explanation. And it really hurts me because they don't know what they're doing to these families or to these people. They're just tearing them apart with no explanation, no reason as to why. Especially if a person is following all of the rules and everything. Like, it's just really heartbreaking.
And I should have set that up better, Allison. That's, she's talking about her her son, Julio Colcas's grandson, who bonded, who he bonded with when he got out of jail because he had never met him before. He was 3 years old. And now he's back in jail and can't meet the granddaughter.
Big picture.
Yeah.
We have an election coming up.
Right.
Should we have a new president? How difficult would it be to make changes to all of these policies we've been talking about?
I think it's pretty difficult to do it quickly. I mean, there's some things that can be done immediately. Biden potentially could eliminate the ban on mostly Muslim countries. But he could raise the refugee cap. So there will be more refugees coming in beginning like the end of next year. But in terms of the issue at the border of there being this major need for Central Americans who are fleeing violence to find safety. Whether Biden is going to open up the borders a little more and allow several hundred thousand Central Americans to come into the country in order to eliminate the humanitarian crises that are happening at the border, I don't think he's willing to do it necessarily. And I don't know how easily that could be done. The other thing is, in terms of detention, I mean, ICE is in communities all over the country. They have contracts with local jails, like the jails in New Jersey, that rely on the revenue from ICE. They have private prison contracts. I mean, this system is so entrenched that the idea of moving toward a more open immigration system for the country in a quick period of time seems unlikely. He could end, you know, family separation and the separation of children. There are certain of the higher profile issues that could be done in the first few months of a Biden administration. But in terms of the complicated immigration problems that we have in the country and how there's a lot of resistance toward opening up our borders to more and more people who are facing a violence abroad, that seems unlikely that could happen anytime soon under a Biden administration.
Well, Matt's going to continue this conversation around immigration tomorrow with John Washington, the author of a book called The Dispossessed. Matt, thank you so much for being here today, and thanks for joining us tomorrow.
Oh, you got it. Have a great weekend, Allison. Thanks.
WNYC Studios is brought to you by ZBiotics. Seize the day after a night of drinks with ZBiotics pre-alcohol probiotic drink. ZBiotics was invented by PhD scientists to break down the byproduct of alcohol, which is most responsible for making you feel crummy the next day. Drink ZBiotics before your first drink, drink responsibly, and you'll wake up refreshed and ready to take on the day. Try it for yourself at ZBiotics.com/WNYC and get 15% off your first order when you use WNYC at checkout. That's ZBiotics.com/WNYC and use the code WNYC at checkout for 15% off.